Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, we're live today. Thank goodness.
I know. It's so much fun. I love it when we do a live show.
We don't do them often enough. We have a few emails already from listeners
Good.
We were going to have a live program. Please email us, foremanwolf@wypr.org, or call in 410-662-8780 and give us your questions, your comments, your opinions. Your favorite recipes.
Your experiences with food and wine. We want to hear your stories.
And if you have problems we can help solve.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll do our best.
Yeah, if you want to learn how to make something in particular, that's always fun to answer.
So, and we do have someone who wants something.
Good.
Immediately from
you. All right,
you.
Let's, oh, from me or from you?
Oh, definitely.
Uh-huh.
Unless you can't do it, then I'll do it. All right. I'm making a pork tenderloin with a brown mustard rub for Valentine's Day. I'm going to cook it on the grill, served with roasted red potatoes with rosemary and green beans.
Sounds good.
Do you have a suggestion for a great wine to match that won't break the bank? Joey in Baltimore.
I think that's a question for you, Tony.
What would you suggest? The reason why I directed it to you is, would you grill a pork tenderloin that had a rub?
I would grill it first and then put the rub on it and finish it in the oven because the rub is going to have a hard time with the grill. So
you're gonna get a mess in your grill.
Yeah, it's gonna be a mess, a bit of a mess. So yeah, I would. I love the idea of the rub, but yeah, I would give it some smoke and some action on the grill first. Get some good marks on it. And
grill
then
action.
Grill action. You know what that is, and then hit it with the rub and pop it in the oven. Finish it in that way. You know, unless if your oven's like completely full with something else, which it doesn't sound like it is from your menu. But yeah, that's what I would do. Sounds good though. So what's the wine?
For wine, well, there are a couple of different possibilities. One, if you want white that's dry or white that's a little bit sweet, I would go to Alsace. Mm. If it's white that's dry, I would look at like a 15 or a 16, a very young, fresh Riesling.
That's fun.
From Alsace. That's going to be a tiny bit off dry, good acidity. We'll like that mustard.
Nice balance.
Nice for the pork.
Okay.
If you want something a little bit sweeter than that, then look at a Pinot Gris, mm-hmm. same region. Mm-hmm. There are lots of great producers. And price-value relationships in Alsace are very, very good. There is one that is neither of those varietals that immediately comes to mind that's a great purchase. That's the producer's name is Fuchs, F-U-C-H-S. And he makes a Pinot Blanc that's excellent. So,
and it's pork tenderloin that he's talking about,
pork
right?
Tenderloin,
yeah, because there's not a lot of fat in that dish.
No.
From his prep, so that's...
The whites will carry it.
That's great.
If you really want a red, it's Burgundy that you want for the dish.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and because with most pork dishes, you have a lot of fat to contend with, but not with a tenderloin. They're super lean, so.
No, you don't. You need the acid for the mustard. You need something to clean up the little bit of pork fat that's there, mm-hmm. but you don't need a lot of tannin for it. So I would go to Burgundy. I would look for a 15 and just a simple Bourgogne Rouge.
That would be great.
We'll help with that.
Any particular houses that you can... Anything you want to suggest or just any sort of...
No, I would take a look at a 15 and take a shot at it.
Yeah.
So that's for Joey in Baltimore.
All right.
So you know what people love?
No.
They love trends.
Yes.
So what's the trend in your kitchen these days?
Well, a trip that I took in January greatly influenced what I'm doing right now. which was I went to Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and one of my favorite restaurants there is called the Snake River Grill. And I've eaten there many times over the years, and I've had their elk tenderloin. And whenever I go out west, I always try to find somebody that's producing, you know, making elk tender. So for our Valentine's menu, I decided I'm putting that on as one of the entrees on the prefix menu. And I brought it in this week, and so I could play with it first because I've worked with venison, but I've never worked with elk
in
particular.
Maybe a lot of listeners have not had elk. What is elk like?
Well, one of the things about any venison, any deer, and elk is also called wapiti, which I just love saying, for one thing. Wapiti, I'm going to say it again. And then the thing with venison is that it's super lean. So obviously this is farm-raised. So it had a very specific diet, but yeah, the animal and elk are huge. It's a very big animal, but the tenderloins average between 1.5 and 3 pounds. So their tenderloins are pretty small. If you figure from
that's a pretty broad average.
Yeah, that was the thing too. When I went to order it, I'm like, wait, 1.5 to 3 pounds? Well, I can't order them by the each. I'm like, yeah. I need 20. Well, actually, I bought 30 pounds of elk, and we sold. I mean, I can't tell you how many we sold last night. And it's the first time I've ever served it. It was so much fun. And one of the things, because it is so lean, obviously, is you really can't cook it past medium rare. I would hesitate to cook it medium. I would do it, but anything medium well done, forget about it. It's going to be super, super dry, because it's so lean, and also it's going to bring out all the gamey flavor once you start to take it to that sort of temperature. But everybody ordered it rare and medium rare. I was so excited about that. And it really was very popular. And I served it with, we grilled it. Just, you know, I've had it with a barbecue rub and all sorts of other different things done to it, which was really, really good. But that's not, you know, that's what I wanted, especially since it was the first time we were working with it. I really wanted the wapiti itself to shine and taste like itself.
You just want
to
say wapiti.
I do, because I think I may get a cat or something and name it wapiti, because I just want to. But anyway, so we served it with.
It's an overstatement name for a cat.
We served it with roasted cipollini onions, maitake mushrooms, and brioche croutons. And what we did was we put butter in the pan and fresh rosemary in the pan with the butter, sort of perfumed the butter with that, add a little salt, and then added everything else to the pan, and served it with a red wine reduction, chicken and veal stock reduction. And it was really fun. I'm super excited about grilling
the elk?
Grilling the elk, yes. And I would suggest grilling it. Especially if you have, oh gosh, I mean, I don't have a wood burning grill where I work. We do in one of our other places, but I think they should serve it sometime, because gosh, I would love to taste it over a wood burning grill. But if you have one at home, like I do, have the ability to do a wood burning grill outside. I'd like to try that one time, because I'd love to taste it with a wood smoke on it.
So how many pairs of cowboy boots do you pack to go to Wyoming?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I literally am going to have to build another shelf in my closet. I have so many.
Oh my God.
Oh, it's ridiculous. My sister was like, if you buy one more pair of cowboy boots. And yeah, I did.
This is the formidable shoe portion.
Well, I'm sure there's some people that are interested. I bought a pair of horsehair black cowboy boots, Old Gringo. Yes, I'm going to say who made them, because they're the coolest boots in the world, and they're made in Mexico.
You're getting a cowboy boot endorsement now?
Amazing. Yes, as a chef, I am giving a cowboy boot endorsement. Yeah, and also...
Why don't we just go to listener questions?
You
want to
move back to...
Yeah, let's go to listener questions.
All right. Is it time for the chef's challenge?
No. Oh, boy, you're going
to
love...
Oh, you're going to cry, Tony.
No.
You're going to cry.
No,
yes.
I'll be fine.
You're going to be like, oh my gosh, really?
When do I cry?
All the time. Go ahead.
I have a lot of feelings. So here it is. A question from Tim in Fells Point. Can we get Cindy's favorite omelet recipe?
Ooh,
and
okay.
How to make an omelet.
That's fun. Oh, gosh. One of the biggest things about making an omelet, and if you want to make a traditional French omelet, is that the egg itself should not get any color. And this is a fun exercise because... it's all about, it's sort of like making the scrambled eggs that I've talked about before. It's all about shaking the pan and breaking the egg up into a fine curd. So you're going on, you can use whatever type of fat you want. I would use butter. So the pan, and if you have a nonstick pan, go for it. If you're confident in your cooking, you can use a stainless steel pan. Just make sure it's got a good amount of fat in it so that the egg doesn't stick to it, and that it's hot enough. You need it hot enough to start, and then you want to turn the heat down. So you've whisked your eggs with salt and pepper, and you can put a drop of cream in, and that I wouldn't put any more than that in. And you have your pan hot, put your butter in, let it melt, turn the heat down, and pour your eggs in, and really start, you know, I use a fork, and start shaking the pan and breaking up the egg. Shake the pan, break up the egg. At some point, you have to stop doing that because you actually want a solid mass. But honestly, my favorite ingredient is not something crazy. It's just good product, which is, and well cooked, which are just about any kind of mushroom, as long as they're to the point of just being caramelized so that they're not flabby. They are, you know, nice and crisp without being overdone, and goat cheese. And also my other favorite thing to have is just simply Gruyere cheese. But, I mean, I could put a million things in an omelet, you know, roasted poblano peppers, a little bit of fresh tomato in the summertime, maybe a little bit of rosemary in the egg batter for a moment just to sort of swish it around in there and perfume it a little bit, you know, something spicy. I always love, actually, I really like salsa, a really good spicy salsa with an omelet, too. It could just have fresh cheese in the center and then serve it with a really good spicy tomato-based salsa. Would be great.
And cooking the omelet in oil, not butter?
I said in butter, but you can cook it in oil. Okay. You can cook it in whatever you want, but it just depends on what you're looking for flavor-wise. Clarified okay. butter is even better than using whole butter, because then you have less, you know, you don't have the milk solids that will burn on you.
Okay, here we go. And so obviously we're live. It's 410-662-8780, or emails are foremanwolf@wypr.org. And we have Kate and Pat in Baltimore. We're making lasagna and want to bring our standard recipe up to the next level. Our go-to is ground turkey and kale. Any tips on how to improve this recipe or to switch it up? And that, I mean, I was going to say I'll start.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Anytime I use ground turkey or ground chicken for something, and I do a decent amount, I always supplement it with duck fat. The turkey has no yeah. fat, essentially. Even if you want the darker meat, you want the leg meat, it has more flavor.
Tasty.
But yeah, you want duck fat mixed in there with it. So even when you go and you brown, if you're browning the meat for the lasagna, do it in duck fat. That's going to make a giant difference in the texture, and that you end up without a dry product. And if you're using kale, then make sure you're grinding it as part of a force meat that goes into the lasagna.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to get all the water out of that you possibly can. You know, everything else that you want to do to season it, to layer it, to play with it, to whatever you're going to do to the bechamel that you serve it with, go for it, and happy to answer other questions. But those couple of things will make a difference in the quality of what you execute.
Mm-hmm. If I do a ground meat, if it doesn't have to be those ingredients that they were referring to, I love ground pork with a little bit of saffron and a little bit of tomato paste in with it, a little bit of really finely chopped onion. And you can make your ground meat just even more flavorful. You could add chili powder. You could add anything. You don't have to. I think one of the things about lasagna is, to me, obviously there's so many beautiful traditional Italian recipes, but you can also open that up to it being like these people are using ground chicken. Whatever ingredients you want, because it just becomes a medium for other things, for anything. I was also thinking
lasagna is a medium for happiness.
It really is. Oh gosh. And my chef de cuisine and I were talking about how we usually leave making fresh pasta to some of the other restaurants. But we would like to make some. And so I just bought a little small machine for the kitchen, and we're excited to get it in. And we were talking about, and I said, you know what, and this is probably more French certainly than Italian, but I was about to make a porcini cream. And then do an open sort of lasagna with only two layers, where you lay a big sheet of pasta on the bottom of the plate, put in sautéed bay scallops, butter poached lobster, and a little bit of really sort of gently cooked shrimp diced up. Put the porcini cream in, a little under, a little in, a little on top, and have another layer of pasta. And, you know, that's a very different approach. But
sort of like an open ravioli.
Exactly. I think it would be a lot of fun to do.
That's definitely a very French open
ravioli. It's very me. But there's so many ways. But the point is that you can do anything you want. That is the great thing about cooking. You know, use your imagination. If you have great product, that's all you need.
Let the very me statement be a foreshadowing for the Chef's Challenge coming up in the third segment. And when we come back, we're taking your calls, 410-662-8780. I know that we have, I think, someone waiting on the line. And emails, because we're getting a bunch of emails, foremanwolf@wypr.org, with your questions, comments, and we'll be back with you in a few moments. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we have some callers, so let's go right to the callers. Anne in Annapolis, how are you?
Hi, Chef Cindy. Hi, Tony.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Good.
So what you got?
Hope you're staying dry today.
Yeah.
Well, I'm getting ready to leave town, and I have a few things in the fridge that I need to use up. And I have some bone-in skin-on chicken thighs, some heavy cream, and some cremini mushrooms. So I'm already motivated to do chicken and cream sauce,
yeah.
But I need to take it to the next level. I mean, I could do it just straight up with white wine, but how should I season it? What can I do to really make this into something special?
The immediate thing that comes to my mind is if you have Bois Madeira or Cognac, I love both of those, or Amontillado Sherry. I love all of those things with chicken, mushrooms, and a cream sauce. If you have a little bit of stock in your freezer, maybe a little bit of reduced stock added to that cream sauce richens it, gives it a lot more flavor. Also, you could perfume the chicken, sort of what we were just talking about. When you're roasting it, you could pop rosemary in the pan with it just to perfume the fat that it's cooking in. Certainly season it well. The other thing you could put in the sauce is a little bit of saffron. I would steep that in white wine before I added it to the sauce. But there's spices. I mean, you know, there's just so many different spices you could add to really sort of depends on what direction you want to go. You could add something spicy to it. Tony has something in his mind.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about it, just listening to you all talk. The chicken thighs themselves, the first thing I think is that I want a little caramelization and I want the maximum flavor from those thighs because the cream sauce is usually pretty neutral. You can do things to cover up what's there, but I'd like to get the most chicken flavor that I can. If you sear them off pretty well, not too dark, sear them off pretty well, deglaze with a little bit of that Madeira and stock, and then add your roasted up mushrooms and your cream, reduce that, you're going to end up with a pretty tender product with really good flavor. Mm-hmm. And you can season it in a bunch of different directions.
Mm-hmm. I feel like you just gave us a chef challenge. That was fun.
I know. I was thinking the same
thing. A mini
thing.
Chef challenge.
I didn't want to throw that out there, though, because that's coming up.
Good. Well, thanks, Anne.
Thanks. Well, I do have the sherry. I do have the Madeira. I have some Calvados.
Good for you. Oh, Calvados would be great.
Save the Calvados for after you eat it.
Oh, Tony wants you to drink the Calvados.
I can handle that.
Have a good, enjoy it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Anne.
Let's go to Joyce in Baltimore. How are you, Joyce?
Hi, Joyce.
Joyce?
Okay, so
there, Joyce?
I think Joyce wanted to talk about cupcakes, but I have a feeling she's not there. I wonder what her question was. We'll go to Buzz has a question, but he's not on the line, so we can just answer his question.
Okay. He is serving a beet and tahini salad and wants to know what protein to serve with it.
You know, with beet and tahini, that you know, the lady, Anne was just talking about chicken, but that would be great, certainly, or a great piece of fish if he wants to stay healthy. You know, a piece of local rockfish would be good with both of those things. I love tahini. Tahini is one of my favorite things. But, you know, if you grill rockfish or if you pan roast it and really get the skin nice and crispy, a piece of salmon would be really good with tahini and beet salad. Actually, that would be really good. If you could find a piece of Scottish salmon and just sear it. Gets, you know, because salmon has such a high fat content that it sears really beautifully in a pan with corn oil. And just if you like it rare, I would do rare or medium rare, and you're just going to have this wonderful, moist, fantastic piece of fish with the beet and tahini. That would be good.
I'm going to take it in a slightly different way since we're getting another chef's challenge. Tahini makes me immediately think of lamb.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they're roasted beets, and there's tahini that's there. Wanted to add some couscous, a lot of parsley, a garlic vinaigrette, and very thin sliced cold lamb.
Sounds good.
And if you have some nice black olives.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great.
So we don't know if Buzz has those ingredients or not.
We don't. Well, you could go to the store and get them, maybe.
Yeah. So I've got another interesting email for
you.
So what is the mushroom terminology on menus these days? What is a wild mushroom? What's a button mushroom? What's a cultivated mushroom? What's a forest mushroom?
That's a good question.
Yeah, this is Jane.
That's a very good
Jane
question.
Jane in Parkton.
Okay, so one of the things is that people don't always, quite frankly, say things correctly on their menus. That's sometimes what it comes down to. So if you have a question, I would ask the waiter, so what are these forest mushrooms that you're referring to? If it's vague like that, because there is, that's not a type of mushroom. I assume they're, I don't know what they mean when they say something like that. I'm not going to actually assume anything.
You hope it means that they're gathered.
Yeah, I hope that means they're wild, but I don't know if that's what they mean. So I would say a button mushroom is a specific type of mushroom. That's a white mushroom, you know, champignon de Paris is what it's called.
And that's a cultivated mushroom.
It's a cultivated mushroom. It's farmed, and that's what cultivated means. And, you know, they are not wild. So you either have cultivated mushrooms or you have wild mushrooms, one or the other.
Cultivated happened on purpose. Wild happened by accident.
Right. Well, wild, yes, are gathered, as you say, and happen in the forest. So that's the question. You can get wild chanterelle mushrooms, porcini mushrooms, morels. Truffles are actually being cultivated now, but so I can't say they're not, but it used to always be that truffles were wild.
In this part of the country, you can often find morels.
Mm-hmm.
You can definitely find fantastic chicken of the woods and hen of the woods.
Yeah, it's amazing
and
what you can find
and
here.
And lobster mushrooms sometimes. That's
right? Yeah. Yeah, what we have locally here is amazing. It's very exciting.
Yeah, so. Harford County and east of Baltimore County, there's a lot, and that's just from people bringing stuff to us.
Yeah, so if you're in a restaurant and you have any question about it, just ask your server, and they should be able to answer the question. If they can, I'm sure they'll go back and ask the chef and get it defined. It's a good question. What kind of mushrooms are your favorites right now, Tony? Are you working with anything that you love a lot?
I think the thing closest to my heart almost all the time are morels.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing about the lousy weather this time of the year is that somewhere in a couple of months,
I know,
someone's going to show up with morels.
Yeah, because we're getting a lot of rain. That's exciting.
And after morels start showing up, asparagus starts showing up.
Yeah. Do you like ramps and fiddleheads? I think of those as the first things
I do.
In fall, too. I think you do. Yeah.
I do. That's buffalo mozzarella
with
fiddleheads and very good extra virgin.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit of shallot is a great, very simple antipasti. That's a very big favorite. Ramps in a risotto with seafood can be really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Ramps with mushrooms, of course. Ramps and mushrooms for a bruschetta. With fresh grilled bread.
It's coming. I know we're not anywhere near yet. We're still in February. We have a way to go.
Looking for it.
Before that's going to happen.
Yeah. Baseball comes and then that food comes.
Yeah, right? Very good. So what do you think is happening right now? You know, let's say over the last 10 years, what do you think is the biggest change in bar service and wine service at the table? Or what's different in the bars? And
I'm going to have to adjust my mind from mushrooms
to
drinking.
That was very jolting of me.
So... I want to get to your question, but we have a question from a listener.
Oh, good.
And yeah, I've had some interesting stuff happen recently in bars that are all above board. This is from Haley in Fells Point. My husband and I, along with 10 friends, are planning a trip to Avignon.
Oh, good.
This October. We're staying in the town of Saint-Rémy. We're wondering if there are any standout vineyards we should check out. Also, any restaurant recommendations in the greater Avignon region would be great.
Huh. Yes.
So?
So, La Bougrevière is in Mondragon, Mondragon, is a very small village. It is north of Avignon, and it is one of my favorite restaurants I've ever been to.
Yeah,
and
I agree with
that.
We've
been eating there for many, many, many years and have taken many of our staff there. He's referred to as the roi de truffes. He is a truffle broker. He comes to work on his tractor. He gets all of his product locally, or a lot of his product locally. He works in the kitchen almost by himself. He is just an incredible chef. It is absolutely worth the drive from Avignon or from Saint-Rémy to go there. And that's my main suggestion.
You're 45 minutes away from Avignon there.
And it's worth it. Absolutely. That's nothing.
On the way there is Châteauneuf du Pape and an awful lot of great vineyards to visit. There's certain ones that are historically important would be good to get to, like Chateau Forcia, FORTIA, or Chateau de Bocastel, maybe the best known.
Yeah.
But there are many other small growers that are excellent.
And those two houses, the owner at Forcia speaks English. And Bocastel is used to Americans now. They're a little bit bigger house. Well, they're a much bigger house, and they're used to having guests. So you just want to make sure you have appointments before you leave.
Yeah, that's
you have to plan ahead.
One of the very nice things about the internet, as far as I'm concerned, is that you can contact wine growers all over the world and set up times to come and see them and taste their work.
Yeah, that's great. Exciting.
The other thing I would give you as a tip in France is that if you're visiting a bunch of wine growers, the person who's driving has to be very mindful of spitting wine that they taste, because the blood alcohol level has, if for a violation, is 0.06. And I was pulled over not for a violation, but just for a random check at 11 o'clock in the morning outside of Vouvray.
I remember.
And just like, welcome to Vouvray. Would you blow into this tube, please?
Yeah, they were stopping everyone. Yeah. That's right.
And they're just sort of guessing that, well, you're there. You know, you've got a group of people. You probably came from a wine tasting, and
yeah,
we're gonna stop you. And
you need a designated driver, definitely.
Yeah, so that someone has to pay attention.
Well, and we always spit when we taste. So we're used to it.
It was no issue for me, but that has changed more and more and more over time. So,
yeah.
Haley, I would say you guys want to
be very careful.
Plan for that.
All right. Cool.
So, now back to your question about drinking. That's a much better segue. What's changed in bars? Well, I mean, there's an explosion of whiskey, an explosion of craft cocktails. Those are the two biggest things that people have run to. It's been an accelerating thing over the last 25 years, really. American whiskey, it's really funny. A lot of the brands that were sort of kind of junk brands. I mean, I remember what I paid for wholesale for things like Old Forester that are a big deal now, or Evan Williams, that's a big deal now.
Mm-hmm.
That it's honestly, Pappy Van Winkle, which is at this point the biggest deal in American whiskey, and that was on the opening bar at Savannah years ago.
Pappy Van Winkle was?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And it was not particularly expensive.
Okay.
And Pete and I could barely sell it to anybody. We could probably get anyone to try it.
Huh. So what's happened? Why is it so expensive now?
There's been more and more. There's only so much production.
Mm-hmm.
And the spirits are interesting and real tasty. And the thing that's interesting is to watch, for me, I'm a person who likes malt whiskey, you know, Scottish malt whiskey in particular, a lot. And to watch that be relatively flat in interest. There is a very trendy bar that does a very good job with a lot of the things they do that I did go into a few weeks ago. And I had one of their cocktails just to sort of be a good sport. You know very well that's not my bag.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked for scotch and maybe a malt whiskey if they had one. And they had many, 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 many things on the back bar that I didn't necessarily recognize, and a decent number that I did that are pretty obscure, and probably 20 different vermouths and all kind of tinctures and bitters and super interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of the bartenders could find a bottle of scotch.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's weird. Huh.
It seems so to me, but that's...
Well, that's just what's happening.
It's just telling me that I'm the old guy now.
No, you're not, but I get what you're saying. Got it.
So
interesting.
Anyway, we've got a caller on the line, Jason in Pikesville.
Hey, Jason.
Question.
How are you?
I am fine. How are you?
Good.
Good. I have a stock-making question. This is one of my favorite times of year. I always get a split side of beef, and the first cold winter, I'll make a nice beef stock.
Awesome.
Now, I know you're supposed to simmer the bones very, very low for a long time. And so I did, and you're supposed to skim off the scum that comes up.
Right.
Right, and then I chill it, take off the fat cap, and then reduce it more. Mm-hmm. The question is, when I'm reducing it more, especially if I'm trying to get down to demi-glace,
yeah,
how much do I have to be skimming after that, or if I'm skimming stuff off, am I actually removing flavor?
Yeah, you really, there shouldn't be anything or anything left to skim after you've chilled the stock. Anything that should be skimmable should float to the top in the refrigerator, and you should be able to just lift that off.
So if there's stuff that like is stuck to the side of the pot as it's reducing, I just want to stir that back in?
Uh-huh. I'm not sure what you're throwing off to the side, but you want to skim that. If there's something going to the side that is foamy and a little weird, yeah, skim it off. But just try to make sure you're using a ladle and just really do your very best to just remove that. It is scum that's coming up then, so which is dried blood, basically, and impurities in the bones. I will tell you one thing about the fat, and I mean, absolutely, you're absolutely right with what you're saying. I will say that a little bit of fat is okay to emulsify into your reduction. It gives you a little bit more flavor. This is absolutely not the way you would normally do it, but it is the way that I do it. We actually it's a little bit of our secret with our stock reductions is that we allow a little bit of that fat to roll back into the stock, and it helps to give you a little bit more viscosity as well when you're reducing it down. If you take it down too far, it'll taste burned. It'll just taste too strong, too overdone. The other thing, when you say the word demi-glace, demi-glace is actually a sauce. Demi-glace has Ruth added to it. Okay, so I'm with you on I'd prefer to reduce it down and just take it to the point of sauce consistency and great flavor. Right. That's what you're looking for.
Got it. And then put some of that fat back in and whisk it back in at the end?
No, you just let it roll into it as it's reducing. You know, in other words, just a little bit, a little bit. But like I'm telling you, school, anybody coming out of culinary school would be like, oh my God, chef just said the wrong thing. I've been making it this way for a long time. It sort of happened one day accidentally, and that's how things work in a kitchen, that some fat got in the reducing process. It wasn't all skimmed off. And I'm like, yeah, this sauce is really good.
Wow.
So there you go.
I'll try that. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, Jason. Right. Tip from Cindy. Skim the scum.
A stock is, I mean, I'm with him. I love this time of the year. I love wintertime food. What's up, Tony?
We have an email that says help.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, we better get to it then.
Yep. For Christmas, my father bought me several jars of bulk food product. I think he was gently trying to nudge me, his single millennial son living in the city, to start cooking for myself. He gave me a huge jar of artichokes.
Hmm.
I've never really liked artichokes.
Uh-oh.
What in the world can I do with all these dang artichokes?
Ooh, make soup, for one
thing. Orin in Greenmount West.
Okay. You could, well...
Who is clearly burdened with guilt.
Aw. I don't know what they taste like that way because I always buy fresh artichokes. I'm assuming they're packed in something like probably some herbs and maybe a little bit of oil and some sort of liquid. I would most likely remove that. But, you know, first of all, taste it and see if it's worth using. It may be worth it to use a little bit of it in a vinaigrette because it could actually taste a lot like artichokes. So if whatever it's packed in tastes good, you can make a little vinaigrette with extra virgin olive oil, a little bit of shallot, Dijon mustard, and whisk in just a couple of teaspoons of that in, which might make for a really incredible vinaigrette. You could also make mayonnaise. You could add garlic, fresh lemon juice to the mayonnaise, or some fresh herbs, a little bit of chopped basil, and make a mayonnaise and have a little cold salad with the artichoke, a little antipasta. You could make a real salad with it. You could add arugula, romaine. Oh my God, there are a million things you could do with artichokes. You could make soup with it. Soup, just to be really fast, would be onions sauteed in butter. Add those artichokes. Again, if you like the liquid, maybe add a little bit of the liquid. If you eat meat, add a little bit of chicken stock, maybe a potato, and let that cook, get tender, puree it, strain it. You have to strain it for sure with artichokes. They're very, very fibrous. You may have to strain it twice, and you could add a little cream to that and make great soup or not.
You know what's good and easy? Artichoke gratin.
That would be great.
You would just slice those guys, lay them out, little onion, little garlic, cream, cheese, breadcrumb.
Yeah, artichokes are
forget
awesome.
About it.
I love artichokes. There are a million things you can do. I wish I could tell you all of them right now.
It's genuinely one of the hardest things in the world to match with wine.
Yeah. So what do you like with it then?
Vernaccia can be really, really good. There's one producer of vernaccia that I found more consistently successful than anyone else for a while. It's a producer named Panizzi. So.
All right.
Anyway, that is my sole vernaccia recommendation. We are live. We're taking your calls, 410-662-8780, or email us, foremanwolf@wypr.org. We'll come back and take any last calls and emails, and then we'll get into the chef's challenge, which, God, Cindy, you're going to love this so much.
I know what that
All
means.
Of that and more on Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine on WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf. Tony.
Yeah, that was very sweet. Very sweet.
Let's talk to John.
Glad this is radio. John, go ahead. How are you?
No, I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Good, thank you.
Yes, so I guess my question is, this time of year, do a fair amount of goose hunting, and I've got a freezer full of geese. And I'm just curious if you guys have any good ways to cook them, any kind of recommendations.
I've never worked with wild game, so I can only imagine that you have something that has really strong flavors and might be tough. That's my only concern. Out of curiosity, does it look like that? It has a lot of fat on it.
No, they're very lean.
They're very lean. Okay, then somehow or other, you have to add fat to the dish because,
The skin has some fat on it.
Okay,
it's thin. It's not like a farm goose by any means.
Okay, because I love goose. I cooked some for Christmas Eve service this year, and oh my gosh, it was so amazing. But it had a ton of fat on the breast in particular, and we left that on. So I would leave any fat on. Don't remove the skin, and if you can, score the breast, maybe break the breast off and serve it by itself, because that might be the one thing that you can serve actually medium rare. I would try it. Have you ever?
Yeah, it's great medium rare. If
oh,
you do
good.
It anymore,
oh, good.
It's like eating a shoe.
Okay,
okay,
perfect. So with goose, again, it's things that are earthy in flavor, like wild mushrooms or domestic mushrooms that are cooked until, the water content is gone. Fresh herbs like rosemary, juniper. Well, actually, juniper would be good. A little bit of juniper ground up in a mortar and pestle, and add a little bit of olive oil to it and use it as a marinade with salt and pepper on that goose. That would be really good.
Okay. Sounds interesting.
Tony's.
I've kind of always had a fantasy about wild goose.
It's really good. It's not overly gamey.
Well, it's a cooking fantasy. Taking the breast meat and rendering off a little bit of that fat that you have on the skin and cutting very thin scallopini with it, pounding that even a little bit thinner, marinate it a little bit, give it a little vinegar.
Yeah.
Go ahead and just like you would veal scallopini, bread and fry those guys.
Ooh, that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you should try that. Well, also that would capture the moisture by frying it in breading or sautéing it. You don't have to fry it in a deep fat fryer, but you can sauté that in corn oil or peanut oil in a pan. That will help to keep some of that moisture in there. That's a good idea. The other thing with things that do need fat, and since goose has so much flavor, one of your favorite hickory smoked bacons or any kind of, just your favorite bacon in strips, you could always add that to wrap the legs in it. Anything that you feel might be too lean, add some pork fat to it somehow, whether it's in the form of smoked bacon or you're getting fat back. But also the other thing is goose loves beans. So you can buy some great beans. I'm a bean person. So, I love things like really great French lentils. Really, really good quality beans makes a big difference. I buy a French green lentil that wholesale is $10 a pound. It's ridiculous, but they're absolutely worth it because they are so good. There's also a place where I buy my grits and my polenta, which are stone ground for me in South Carolina. They have old types of beans. They're called petite rouge peas and Sea Island white rice peas. You can buy those on the internet through them. The company's called Anson's Mill, and those are great.
Oh, yeah.
My gosh.
I bought stuff from Anson's Mill before.
Okay, cool. That would be awesome with goose.
Okay.
The other thing, some of the meat that you know is going to be tough, whether it's drumsticks and wings, all that kind of business, you can use some of those bones to make stock, and some of that meat you can cook very well done as part of a ragu. And make fantastic ragu for pasta.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be delicious.
Or serve with polenta, because that's the place where you'll see that in
And also, if you make polenta, you could put cream in it instead of water, which would give you more fat, which would help to balance out the leanness of the bird.
Okay.
Good question.
Thanks, John.
Thanks for calling.
Sure. Okay. Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye.
Goose loves beans. I want to write that children's book. You were just stalling with John there, trying not to get...
This amazing chef challenge.
You have a situation.
If you put spam on this chef challenge, don't
you? No spam, no hot dogs.
Oh, he's pointing at me. Okay, I wish you all could see this.
I'm pointing.
All right.
Did
you
say
there are no hot dogs? Thank you.
No hot dogs.
Oh, I love fresh macaroni.
Stop.
Oh,
there's a situation. You have to understand it first. The situation is that I'm suddenly ill, and people are expecting me to be cooking. you need to try to cook like me the ingredients on your list.
I don't have to do that. Why can't I cook? Okay.
No, that's the situation. Come on. You give me
a
ridiculous.
Could we make it a more
you
positive
put me in the forest
situation?
Before.
Could. That was positive. Fresh macaroni, eggs, smoked to bacon, parmigiano, flat leaf parsley. I almost said frat. Green apples, ooh, fennel, lemons, chickpeas, preserved tomatoes, dried chilies, honey, branzino. Okay, sage leaves, carrots, black Tuscan kale, onions, garlic. Okay, all right. Extra virgin olive oil, red wine, vinegar. Those are my ingredients. This is a good list, Tony. You scared me, and it's all fun. Okay, chickpeas need to be cooked. They take forever, so the first thing that's going to happen is I'm going to cook the chickpeas. I don't see any stock here.
Nope.
Okay, so they're going to have water, the dried chilies, the sage leaves. I'm going to dice some of the carrot and put it in there, onion, garlic. That's all very good. Some of the preserved tomatoes are going in the pot. And that's going to be fun. So, and the smoked bacon. So I just use like half of these ingredients in the chili. And so the chickpeas, we cook them and on low heat, nice and tender, absolutely no salt in there until the very end. And then that's done. And the whole branzino, I don't know. Is that how you would do it, Tony? That's how I would do it. The whole branzino, I'm going to roast
my
whole.
Mind.
I don't want to. The branzino, I'm going to roast whole. Okay, so I have to put little slits in the branzino. I'm going to save a little bit of that garlic. I'm going to just kind of crush it on the cutting board with a little bit of extra virgin olive oil and salt. And I'm going to smash it into the slits on the branzino. And I'm going to roast that whole, some of those lemons you gave me. I'm going to thinly slice fennel and green apple near the end of the cooking process, throw it in the pan in the roasting process. With it, and then I'll cook it until it's tender, which I don't normally do, but I think you would. And meanwhile, I'm going to saute. Ooh, the fresh macaroni is going to get cooked with the Tuscan kale, and Tony would add the egg to it, and the parmigiano, and the parsley. I did it. Okay, it's your turn. Good luck, Tony.
You did Tuscan kale, carbonara with Tuscan kale. I'm still trying to get my head around that.
We don't have much time
God
left.
God bless us. No.
Hurry up.
Squid ink, prosciutto, extra virgin olive oil, a good one. Garlic, onion, thyme, rosemary, ground pork, flour, eggs, veal, chicken stock.
We were kind of on the
peppers,
same page with our chef
challenges. Mushrooms, elk tenderloin. All right. Well, the first thing, this is a totally carnivorous sort of a challenge, which they sometimes are from you. I want to make meatballs. I want to make... I don't know what in the world you do with the squid ink with this stuff.
Hmm. I guess you'll have to figure that out.
I mean, there's flour, there's eggs. I mean, I could make pasta. Make a little squid ink pasta. That's fine. There's nothing to... Squid ink pasta, what are you going to garnish it with? Like grilled poblano peppers? I mean, that's about it. So,
you seem
little
so happy
on
right
that.
Now.
Yeah, I know. I'm not that happy about that. I would like other things to work with. A little bit of the prosciutto, the thyme, the ground pork, a little more of the flour, some stock, and roast off some of the mushrooms to make nice pork meatballs. That's great. And that you serve that as its own course. There's no... Well, you need to give me stock. I'll reduce the stock to roast those meatballs in and have reduced to be sauce for it. You gave me no tomato product.
Oh my god.
I'm just gonna whine about it.
You're gonna start crying?
Yes.
Wow.
Elk tenderloin, I'm gonna wrap in the prosciutto.
Oh, love it when you say that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're welcome. And I'm gonna grill it in the oven. I'm gonna roast it in the oven rather. And then slice that very thin and lay that out on nothing because you give me nothing else. So I'm going to give that, take some of the extra virgin olive oil and a little bit of the garlic. I'm going to roast just a little bit, mash that, and just dress the elk tenderloin with some of the crushed rosemary, a little bit of the garlic, the extra virgin olive oil, and nothing after roasting and wrapping the prosciutto.
We can now imagine what Tony was like as a child. Uh-huh.
Yeah, 52 years ago, I was pretty much the same. So... Let's see. If I was drinking, and after that list, I would definitely
be drinking.
You would
drink a lot.
with what you just gave me, I might...
Scotch whiskey? Shots?
No, I don't do shots.
I know you don't. I'm just kidding.
Drink, if it's quantity, I'm going to drink it in a civilized way. Like maybe Aglianico, maybe Aglianico del Vettore, from a good producer like Musto Camelotano, or the less tannic Aglianico would be interesting with the meal that you gave me. Also, honestly, Sangiovese, good solid Sangiovese, whether from the Chianti zone or some of the interesting Sangiovese Merlot blends that you get from the same area that are a little mm-hmm. fleshier. Mm-hmm. But I think for the weirdest menu of all time, the squid ink pasta and the meatball and the elk, I think that's what I would want.
Okay, that sounds good. How about mine?
For yours, because I gave you something that could actually become a menu.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think the macaroni with the egg and everything.
That's a nice white wine meal, that and the branzino. Mm-hmm. But white wine with good acidity and pop to it. Verdicchio would be a natural for it.
Mm-hmm.
I would look at that.
When I never said I wanted to add the red wine vinegar you gave me to the chickpeas at the end to give it some acid.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yes, I know. I feel so relieved to be able to
really,
say that
I was
out
really
loud.
Upset.
And lemons.
You know I would add acid to it.
Yes, you would. You like vinegar. So do I.
So, yeah.
I like the idea of the fresh macaroni, too, because I never, until we were in Italy, I never knew that you cooked macaroni and stock like that. How good that is. Rather than, you know, we're so used to thinking when you cook pasta here that we cook it in water with salt. And, you know,
you boil it and stick a sauce on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
When the happiness of pasta is that you cook it in salted water to just get it warm and to season it.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens in the pan with whatever you're garnishing it with, whatever you're seasoning it with, if you have it at the right temperature and the right salinity, it's just going to absorb into the pasta.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And that's where magic happens, you know.
That's funny.
The garnish is not the point. It's the flavor in the pasta.
Right. All right. That was fun. Thanks for your calls, everyone.
Thanks for your calls. If you have follow-up emails, it's foremanwolf@wypr.org. You can download this or any other podcast of our programs on the WYPR webpage, wypr.org. Go to the Foreman Wolf page, and there's a whole menu of goodies. If you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Instagram as Chef Cindy Wolf and on Twitter as Chef Wolf.
Mine, predictably enough, Instagram is The Real Tony Foreman. Thanks so much for listening.
And happy Sunday.